This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. For most of us, physical distancing for COVID-19 is a mixed bag, and it often includes a big dose of loneliness. But for people who now have to remain at home with an abuser, it's downright dangerous. Domestic and sexual violence prevention advocates are already seeing an increase of calls for help in Michigan, and they're working to provide some support to survivors who've been cut off from their communities. With us now is Sarah Prout-Rennie. She's executive director of the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. Sarah, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
So both in Michigan and really all around the world, we're starting to hear that domestic violence calls are on the rise now that folks are stuck at home. Can you tell us a little bit about how the pandemic has changed things for victims, both adults and kids too?
Absolutely. We are seeing a marked increase in the amount of violence at home. And we are also aware that the systems that we rely on, like law enforcement and prosecution, are starting to shut down. Law enforcement is getting sick. Prosecutors aren't taking the cases. So the things that normally keep batters in check, who are making a choice to use violence, our community responses, and those things are also failing. So we have this sort of perfect storm of folks home with their perpetrator. At the same time, there are systems that we rely on to keep them safe are failing.
I mean, this was something a lot of people were concerned about, but do we have any hard data about the uptick, or is it still anecdotal?
Well, we have beginnings of hard data. We know that, for example, in Traverse City, there's been an increase by 17% in calls. In the mid-Michigan counties, there's been double increase in calls. We don't have statewide data, so it's county by county, but we are starting to see a pattern. The problem of keeping this kind of data, it's a complex question, and folks are doing their best just to keep programs open and ensure that folks are safe. So we're seeing the beginnings of data, but we're not entirely sure that we have a statewide view.
I know that some shelters are indeed still open if people are just in a situation where they feel their lives are threatened. What's going on? What's life like at the domestic violence shelters that you know of?
Well, folks at our shelters, and all of them are open, and all of them are taking survivors, and all of them are working diligently. These are heroic folks. It is hard. We're working very close with our public health departments to see ways to make sure that social distancing is implemented. These are normally communal living shelters, so we might have 60 beds normally, but to ensure safety, we only put one family per room, which means you're reduced to 30 or 40 beds. And we're trying to serve people in hotels and make sure everyone gets served. But as our staff gets sick, that means doing more with less over and over again.
Yikes. What kind of sense do you have about whether the shelters you work with are at capacity? I mean, what are the needs? Is there anything that they would take if they could get donations right now?
Absolutely. Like everyone else, they need cleaning supplies and gloves and masks and thermometers. We don't make folks take their temperature, but most of the folks in shelter volunteer. They also need basic financial donations. We ask that you not give any concrete physical donations at this time unless they're very specific within the realm of things folks need, like health-related or diapers or feminine hygiene products. What we mostly need are money to support quarantining sick folks in hotels, making those people as comfortable as possible, supporting telework, all these extra expenses that are not anticipated in a very tight budget to begin with.
I mean, we know that in other kinds of disasters, maybe a big storm or a tornado, the impact rates of domestic violence do tend to rise. But is this situation a little bit different?
It is. We hear the word unprecedented a lot, but I also would say catastrophic, because you have, again, the systems problem of folks in sheltering all day with their perpetrator. At the same time, law enforcement and prosecution and shelters are struggling to ensure they're able to provide normal community responses. And one of the major tools of a perpetrator is isolation. You're going to see a pandemic of violence in addition to this pandemic of illness.
Let's talk a little bit more about what you said regarding law enforcement and the courts. What are you telling people right now, given that a great many civil cases are just getting pushed off to the back burner, and the fact that criminal cases, that police are having to prioritize the things that they think are absolutely the most important because they just can't get to everything? How does that affect what you tell people as they're calling in and asking for help?
Well, we are telling folks to still call law enforcement. We work really closely with law enforcement. We are telling them to still call us and let us advocate with law enforcement. But we are hearing law enforcement say things like, we're not going to arrest anyway because we think the perpetrators are going to be released from jail regardless. So we're also telling survivors to do what they have to do to survive during this period, whatever that needs to be, to create a safe space for themselves, even if it's a mental safe space, to create, reach out to loved ones, even through Skype, to create supports. See if you can create your own community at a time when, again, some of these systems are struggling.
How has the COVID crisis and the order to stay at home changed how you're doing your job right now?
Well, I represent all 73 shelter and service providers, and they have I'm working sort of 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, because they have a variety of technical assistance and legal questions. And at the same time, I'm working to advocate around who gets released from prison, who gets released from jail, making sure that those folks are nonviolent. And we also run a statewide sexual assault hotline, and calls are up on that hotline as well. Mm. So I am very privileged in that I can do my job from home, but it is necessary. We sort of like man the lighthouse at the coalition.
You're someone who deals regularly with very tough situations, but there's just so much that feels uncertain right now. Is there anything that's getting you through this moment?
Oh, thank you for asking that. The folks that I work with, and particularly the first responders and the folks who are working directly in shelter, are some of the most heroic people I know. They make $10 an hour and they're going in often without corrective cleaning or protective equipment to make sure survivors of domestic and sexual violence have a place to be. And it's the same with law enforcement who go out every day despite the dangers that they're taking. It's the least I can do to provide backup supports to the folks who are out, you know, have their boots on the ground.
Would you say this moment of sort of pausing and at the same time trying to provide services in a very different way, has this given you any different insights to the system that we have right now to help domestic violence victims and maybe ways in which it could be better or even just different?
We're in an unprecedented time of being able to create community. I have gotten a lot of wonderful responses of how can we help from folks who wouldn't necessarily be paying attention to this issue. And I think we could capitalize on that or advocate through that we need to respond as a community to make sure victims stay safe and offenders stay held accountable. And this might be a wonderful moment of coming together.
What might that look like?
What that does need to look like is just more community response. There's been a lot of response in social media and financial response. This is an issue that you often hear is a family issue or isn't something that is a priority. And I'm hearing from more and more people, well, that happened to my sister, that happened to my cousin. Folks are being vulnerable around the fact that this doesn't have to be a secret or a shameful thing. And that may create a new sort of synergy around talking about this issue.
In the midst of all the other pressures and all the other emotional problems that victims are dealing with, there's this whole problem of trying to keep oneself safe, maybe trying to do for others, like children and older family members. What are you noticing about just the headspace that people are in right now and maybe the sort of conflicts between trying to do things for people in your life and trying to do things to keep yourself safe?
Well, there's a wide range, as there are a wide range of people, but the majority of Michiganians are choosing to go the extra mile for each other. And that has been a remarkable thing. And for survivors, we really want to get the message out because many of them are concerned about coming to our programs that we are as safe as possible. There's no guarantee in COVID, and that you really still should continue to reach out.
And we should probably just recap one more time. If I'm someone who is not safe at home right now, in a moment when we're all being told to stay put, how do I get help?
You can go to our website, which is www.mcedsv.org, or call 855-VOICES-4, and we'll talk to you as long as we need to talk to you. If you can't get away from your perpetrator, we recommend that maybe take a walk and see if you can connect to someone even 6 feet away who can maybe make those calls for you.
Sarah Prout Rennie is the Executive Director of the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. Sarah, thank you so much for your work and for talking to us today.
Thank you.